been feeling like I have to always be juggling all the balls, because no matter what, we will always be dropping balls. It's just making sure to drop the right one.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Currently Bossing Podcast, powered by the Boss Up Inc. On this podcast, we discuss all things relating to career, social media, influencer marketing, and what it really takes for you to create your mark in today's digital landscape. I'm your host, Brittany Nicole, founder and CEO of the Boss Up Inc. Hi bosses, welcome back to the Currently Bossing Podcast, powered by the Boss Up Inc., where we help female entrepreneurs and creators bridge the gap between boss life and wellness, ensuring that they become more balanced bosses. I'm your host, Brittany Nicole, and today we're chatting with Muna Ikedion. Muna is a passionate, forward-thinking business strategist and social equity expert. She attended Vanderbilt University to study the connection between business, culture, and chemistry. Her unique background paved the way for a variety of experiences, including serving as president and editor-in-chief of her campus, Vanderbilt, synthesizing 30-plus patent-pending molecules as a chemistry researcher, and executing content partnerships with Warby Parker, Coca-Cola, and the New York Times, amongst others. Before founding MKD, Muna served as Associate Director of Stylehouse, an award-winning strategic communications and business development consultancy, where she supported both the firm's corporate clients and Stylehouse founders' investment portfolio. Now, in addition to MKD, Muna is impact advisor to women-led cannabis company Garden Society and sits on the board of leading mental health nonprofit Sad Girls Club.
All right, Muna, welcome to the show. I know you're a quite busy woman, so I'm excited to chat with you today about all your ventures, especially MKD. So I'm excited to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be joining. I have been such a fan of your past episodes and hearing all of the women who have spoken. I'm honored to be included in the bunch.
Yes, it's going to be such a great conversation. And one of the questions that I love to always start off with is to set the scene for our listeners. So tell us a little bit about you and your career story.
My career story starts, like a lot of people, from when I was a kid. I like to say that Oklahoma was where I grew older and Tennessee is where I grew up, because I spent most of my childhood in Oklahoma. But when I moved to Tennessee, that's kind of where I was really opened to like what the world could be in terms of career. But growing up in Oklahoma, I always had an interest in like fashion and beauty, to shop in fashion and beauty or to kind of buy things I liked. But I had no idea that there was an entire industry behind it until I was in junior high and a girl brought an issue of Teen Vogue to class to share with her friends. And when I looked at it, it blew my mind that there was an entire like industry, or there's people in some room somewhere like developing products and coming up with ads. It was very much like that Devil Wears Prada scene where like you think that you are doing this isolated, but there's actually the whole community of people behind it. And that really opened my eyes to what fashion could be. So when I moved to Tennessee in high school, I ended up going to Vanderbilt for college, and I studied corporate strategy and medicine, health, and society, which medicine, health, and society is kind of an interdisciplinary, like unique to Vanderbilt major. So you kind of could pick what you wanted. But for me, it specifically was studying the intersection of medicine, health, beauty, wellness, and its impact on society, and vice versa, specifically through a business lens. So I essentially spent 4 years studying how all of these major brands were impacting society, from, you know, Glossier to Viagra to, you know, all of these things that became household names, despite the fact that, you know, they were really just pharmaceutical companies or pharmaceutical brands or beauty brands. And when doing that, I thought I was going to be an MD, PhD. Like, I genuinely believed I was going to do an MD and become a dermatologist while also getting my PhD in chemical engineering. And I actually kept that in my mind for quite a long time. It took a while for me to chip away at that. And I am really thankful for a professor I had who was somewhat of a mentor. And she was asking me what my career ambitions were my freshman year. And I told her that I wanted to work in product development at, you know, Pfizer or Estee Lauder or something like that, and wanted to do an MD, PhD. And she looked me in my face and said, you don't need to do all of that. Like, you don't, no, like, people in the industry, you don't have to do all of that.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose one path and you're still qualified and deserving a seat at that table. Mm-hmm. And even though it took me a while to kind of chip away at that, I can appreciate her saying that, because I realize now in hindsight that it was very much working twice as hard to get half as much and wanting to feel super overqualified to mm-hmm. be in these really prestigious institutions. So throughout my college career, I kind of was trying to explore what that future could look like. And mm-hmm. then my senior year, coincidentally enough, I ended up doing a staycation in Nashville. So I was going to go to New York, but that trip ended up falling through. So I was doing a staycation in Nashville, and I walked into this hotel called the Noel Hotel. And it was like the coolest, most interesting, fun thing I'd ever seen in my life. So I spent 3 days researching who came up with it, who was the agency behind it, like whose concept, brought this hotel to Nashville. Mm. And I ended up finding the creative consultancy behind it. I emailed them and said, I know I'm a, you know, scientist. I'm in, you know, chemistry research, but I really love what you do. I would love to intern for you. I've seen that you've been interviewed in the Couverture and Van der Pelle and all of that. Like, I would do anything to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
And they let me intern for there for a year. And at the end of my internship, they essentially said, you know, I'm glad you had a good time. This was really beneficial, but I think it's time for you to move to New York. Like, I would definitely thought I wanted to stay in Nashville and work there, but they said that there was so much bigger opportunities and so many more experiences in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up moving to New York and working in traditional PR for about 3 months before I realized it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
And I liked the interdisciplinary part of my past studies and the internship I was at. So I quickly moved to a communication strategy and business development firm that specialized in fashion, beauty, and wellness. And from there, that's pretty much the only real full-time job I've ever had, because I went from account director or account coordinator to associate director there. And then from there, I left and started my own firm last year.
That is amazing. First, I want to take it back to having solid people in your corner who can tell you, like, you don't have to do all that to achieve your goals. Like, here are some other options, or here are some other ways to go about it, because, like, that's important, one. And two, I think just, like, being a go-getter and just, like, seeing something that caught your eye and, like, doing the research and wanting to figure out more and how you can be a part of it just to get your foot in the door and be knowledgeable in that aspect is also something that's important nowadays. Because, you know, it's one thing to apply for jobs on LinkedIn and Indeed and all these other places, but it's another thing to make those intimate connections and say, hey, like, I saw your work here and I really liked and appreciated it. And this is why I want to intern, or why I want to work with you, or whatever the case may be. So I love that, hearing your career journey. So when did you start your own firm? Like, how did you know that you were ready to do that?
So I technically, like, took the leap and went mm-hmm. full time self-employed about, feels like it's been forever, but also not that long ago. So it was a little less than a year ago.
Congratulations.
I've technically been doing this work on the side really since I was in high school, but most specifically over the past 2.5 to 3 years. And I'm a unique scenario in the sense that, like, I'm pretty much just doing what I was doing in my full-time roles, just in the way that I want to do it. So it wasn't that much of a difference. And I really have been, the work I do, I really, I mean, it's kind of nerdy and weird, but, like, business strategy and, like, beauty brand development and fashion brand development is something that I really love to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing it here or there, even when I was in high school, because I was that kind of person that would see a brand and reach out and say, I really love what you're doing. Like, I would love to help with this or that. And because I was in Nashville, you know, everything was digital. They had no, and that was before, like, Zoom was the standard. So, like, I never even saw them In person, it was just like phone calls or emails, and they had no idea how young I was. If they would have known my age, it probably would have been a different scenario. Essentially, because I've been doing this in some sort of capacity, or I've been passionate about it and doing it before I was paid, it felt so much easier when it became time to take the leap, because I felt confident that I had been doing it for so long while having a full-time job. So if I had the time to focus on it, I knew that, you know, there may be times that were tough or hard. I could still power through it. And I don't think there's ever a time where you like definitively know, like, this is where, this is the date I'm going to leave. I think I had it in my mind for probably a year before I actually left. But it was just a matter of like scaling and capacity, that essentially I didn't have time to take on the clients I wanted to, who wanted to work with me, because my full-time job was getting in the way. So at that point, it's like, okay, I can have more free time, work on more things I love, and get paid more by leaving my full-time job. It's a kind of a no-brainer. And my boss knew I was doing work on the side, and she was the one who actually sat me down and said, you know, I think this is where you, like, I'm not going to fire you. I'm not going to, like, make you, I don't, not that I don't want, you know, you to work for me, but I think this is actually where your future lies, or your calling lies. So I think that you should pursue that. So I gave 10 weeks notice and off-ramped from that before starting my own.
Yeah, I think I do agree with you. I think that there's no really defining moment, no real defining moment. I think that you kind of just know when you know, and when you're starting to feel that pull from your full-time job, and it's just kind of like, okay, I'm going to have to take the leap eventually. So let me just do it and just lead with no fear. So did you have some fear in like those beginning weeks, like when you're like, oh, like I'm actually doing this?
I probably have more fear now than I did then. I think sometimes, like, your past just, like, jumping into things kind of looks, I don't know if you ever feel this way, but sometimes I look back at, like, even when I think about that email I sent to people when I was in high school, or even to get that internship, how bold I was, and I may not be that person now. But at the time, no, I didn't really feel that much fear. And there's two reasons why. And I want to give a caveat for people who may not be in a scenario and may feel like guilty or whether they don't feel that way, but also people who could be in the scenario and kind of set themselves up for that. Is that one, I had already had clients on board. So I wanted to get at least one more client before I left. And I did get that client, and I told them that my start date would essentially be like a month after my last, so I gave myself kind of a buffer, but a month after I left my job. So I already had clients lined up for myself, or I was already working with clients. So I think that's a much easier transition, or kind of mitigates the fear, if you already are essentially doing what you love or getting paid for what you love, and can just scale that up. And secondly, which is something that I think that a lot of newer business strategists struggle with or find that they may not feel comfortable doing quite yet, is longer retainer agreements. So when I had left my full-time job, most of my clients were one-year retainers. So I knew that, or 6 months, I'm a retainer. So I knew I would at least be good for 6 months. And that was enough for me to be like, I'm good. I don't need to be scared. I'll be fine. And if worst case scenario, like, I am not too good to like work in retail, work at a coffee shop. If it comes down to it, like, I would love to find a cute coffee shop, or, you know, a nice store that I like, and work there if I need to supplement it. So that's kind of really what mitigated the fear. It's more now where I'm like, wow, I have to do this hustle for the next, I don't know, 2 decades if I'm going to, you know, have this be my career. That's a little bit more the fear comes, like the long term of sustaining it. But at the time, leaving felt very in the moment. Like, there's no other option.
Yeah.
So it felt pretty natural.
I can definitely relate with you on that. I felt like in the beginning stages, since I just made 2 years, just being like full-time
Congrats
on my own.
Congrats to you.
Thank you. But I feel like in those beginning stages, like building, getting my clientele, making sure I had like a great amount of savings, and then taking the leap, and then hustling to get clients and things like that. But like now, I feel like people talk a lot about starting a company, but they don't talk a lot about how much work it is to maintain a company. And that's really where the work comes in. Like, maintaining is what the conversation should be about, because it's easy to start. Yeah.
I agree with you. I think that there's far too many conversations about starting. Mm-hmm. But also, starting is just a moment. I saw something recently that was so helpful to put things in perspective, that like, no one remembers the day that Twitter launched, or Glossier launched, or any of these companies launched. Like, we weren't there for day one, or even day 10, or day 100. I mean, some of us were, but really the majority of us weren't. And I think the hardest part is the growth and the scaling it. Because I'm happy now, but my 5 years from now self will probably want to raise and want like all of these different things. Like, so how do I make sure I get that? Or building out your team, or getting bigger clients, or figuring out, you know, if your interests shift or you want to try something new that you haven't done before, but still within your field. I think that's where the challenge comes in. And I feel like so few people are talking about that struggle, which is usually the majority of entrepreneurship struggles.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. And I know that, you know, you have MKD, but you also have some other things that you are actively working towards, like being an impact advisor for Garden Society and a board member for Sad Girls Club. So how do you stay afloat and how do you manage everything?
Well, I always tell people that I'm not as busy as people think I am. I, like, all of my friends think, and maybe I just like lack the self-awareness to see, but I genuinely feel like I have like the, I don't think that work-life balance necessarily is as simple or as achievable as people make it think, but I feel really comfortable and confident in the amount that I work, in part one because I truly do love what I do and I love the people I work with. I get to work with a lot of my friends or become friends with the people I work with, so that makes it easy to balance. And also, a lot of my work is interconnected. So in terms of running MKD and being a board member for Sad Girls Club, like, Sad Girls Club actually ended up becoming a client of mine, so it ended up fitting in. So I'm a board member, but they're also a client. So it's a little bit more work than just being a client or just being a board member, but it works so well together, and it really makes it easier for me to balance it all. And likewise with Garden Society, we've done work that's crossed over with Sad Girls Club, and Sad Girls Club is their impact partner. So a lot of my way of making it easier for myself is kind of figuring out where there's synergies or ways that they can work together, and then kind of being that glue or that connection. And it helps them actually, you know, them as businesses and as organizations do better, but it also makes my life and my schedule be better. But even beyond that, because even no matter how much I could connect the dots and things like that, there's still some days that get a little bit more hectic or intense. I like to say that no matter what, we're all going to drop the ball. It's just making sure you're dropping rubber balls, not glass balls. So I spend each day when I feel overwhelmed figuring out, like, who can I drop the ball on? And it's okay. I can just send that email tomorrow or push that deadline back a week. And which balls are glass? And if I mess something up or I turn something in late, like, this will risk me losing a client, or this will actually have this dollar amount impact on, you know, revenue. And when I think about it that way, it becomes much easier than feeling like I have to always be juggling all the balls, because no matter what, we will always be dropping balls. It's just making sure to drop the right one.
I love that analogy. And I feel like that's so, it's such a good one to have, because you can really stress yourself out, overwork yourself by trying to put everything on your to-do list. And the truth of the matter is, you can't get to everything. So why stress yourself out? Just all about like reprioritizing and making sure that you handle everything, especially like in an efficient way as an entrepreneur, because it does fall on you eventually, like, but it's just like what you said, just making sure that you reprioritize and think about it in that way. So I guess, what do you like to do when you do have certain days where, you know, you might be juggling a few things, or your plate might be more heavy seasons, where work might be more heavier than other seasons? How do you reset and realign? Are there some practices you like to take in?
So one of the most important practices that I have which is so simple, but actually snaps me out of things really quickly, is to gain perspective. And I quite literally tell myself, sometimes when I have clients that are also feeling overwhelmed or we're working on these big projects, I step back and say, we're not curing cancer. We're literally not curing cancer. And as someone who literally was doing that or was working in that field, like, it's such a, like, there's so much pressure that you can put on yourself because you feel like you're saving the world. And you're like, we're selling fuzzy slippers, you know, we're hosting a brunch, we're launching a foundation. We're not curing cancer. Everything I feel like, in marketing and business strategy feels urgent. But I feel like there's so many things that come our way that we can just say, actually wait, like this can, we can give ourselves a little bit more time. So that's actually the first thing I do with this reset, a realignment of how fast things have to happen or how important they are, that, you know, I am a human first. This is, you know, the world exists beyond capitalism and business and product and consumerism. And the second is falling back into my routines. I think sometimes when you get the busiest is when you fall out of those routines. And it can be small things that they themselves may not be that helpful to you, but just having that process, you know, making your cup of coffee. I know I'm getting busy when I forget to make my cup of coffee in the morning. And I don't even drink, I don't know if a coffee drinker, I don't even drink at all, but just knowing that ritual is like, okay, well, I spent the time to get up a little bit early, you know, make the cup of coffee, light the candle, open the windows, and, you know, have that 10 minutes of calm before I start working. When I wake up early but feel like I have to send emails first before I do that, or I woke up late because I was staying up late the night before because I was so exhausted with working late, those kind of things fall through the cracks. So sometimes it's just making sure I set myself back into my routine. And that can be enough of like a shift or a mindset realignment that makes things fall into place.
That really is important, because when you start missing like some of your habit cues, then you know, like, oh, wait, I'm out of alignment. Let me like take a step back and do that. And I felt like that was something that I was starting to struggle with my full-time job. I was always rushing to work and I was like falling behind on my schedule and things like that. But then I had to be real with myself and say, like, I'm not passionate about doing this. Like, this is why, like, part of the reason why I'm not, you know, being so proactive with being, you know, efficient there. So I think that's something that we need to take aware of too, like being more self-aware and, realizing like what's causing us to be set back too. So do you have any morning routines? Or I know you say you don't really drink coffee, but what do you feel like helps you flow into the day?
See, the thing is, I don't really drink coffee, but I make coffee every day because it's aspirational to me. I want to be a coffee drinker. I think it would make my days so much better and easier. my morning routine varies it not from day to day, but essentially from season, because there's also some times where sometimes self-care is just knowing that you have to get through today or get through this heavy week. You know, sometimes it is a glass ball and you have to, you know, push through and kind of do a bit of an overload. But ideally my morning routine is that I wake up and I open all the curtains in my apartment. I live in New York, and for those of you in New York, know that it's a luxury to have really good light. My apartment has great light. So I go through my apartment and open up all of the curtains. I light a candle. I'm a candle gal, and I feel like that can be just a small ritual of, you know, mindfulness and self-care. And then once I kind of set the tone for my apartment, since I work from home, I do my bathroom, my morning routines, you know, brushing teeth, washing face, all of that. And while I'm doing that, I typically check my calendar on my phone. So I have the Google Calendar app. And I also check the stock market, which is a bit newer of a thing that I've started doing the past 6 months or so. But I do that to kind of stay abreast of new things that are happening in the industry. And also, as an entrepreneur, part of self-care is caring about your retirement. So just kind of keeping in mind of, you know, what's going on there. And it also keeps me off of like Instagram or my email. I try really hard not to check my email before I sat down at my computer. So kind of being mindful of the personal and the professional in terms of growth for Callender's stock market. And then once I finish my bathroom routine, I have a Keurig. So I kind of just set that to make my cup of coffee. And then in 2 minutes that takes, I put my laptop up. I type in my password so it can load. I try to get dressed and like put on like real clothes and real shoes. And then grab my cup of coffee and sit down. And then my first hour is usually sending like the most important emails, like the things that I want a response by end of day. So I should probably get it out by 9 or 10 a.m. So it's essentially like, ideally, that's my morning routine, but there's plenty of days. In fact, probably half the time that isn't how it falls through, just because of, you know, habit forming is not not as easy as habit maintaining.
That is so true. And I love to say that it's important to listen to your body as well, and just figure out what buckets you need to pour into that day. Like sometimes you might need to pour into the mind portion, the mind bucket, rather than like the body or soul bucket. But it's just like being self-aware of like what it is that your body is needing. Because sometimes, you know, your morning routine, it's not perfect. It's not pretty. It's just doing what you need to do to get through the day and be the most efficient self that you could possibly be. Would you say that there are days in your career now where maybe early on you felt like imposter syndrome, or you felt like you had to kind of just like present yourself in a certain way to clients and things like that? And now do you still feel imposter syndrome, or I guess, how do you work through that, especially working in social media and just being present in those areas?
So I feel like I'm really lucky in that I haven't really felt much imposter syndrome throughout my life. And I felt weird about that until Christy Weatherford, who I love, who our work overlapped quite a bit in industry, like what we do similar things. And she's a former editor at Harper's Bazaar. And she did a lot of Q&A's on her Instagram, and someone asked her about imposter syndrome. And she's like, yeah, I don't really feel that. I mean, I know that I do good work and I'm smart and capable, and my clients pay me for what brands commission me for as an influencer. But I know I do a good job and I performed well in that sense. So for the most part, I would say that I don't necessarily feel imposter syndrome, partially because I almost try to prevent that from happening, from essentially kind of being overqualified for things, like putting extra work in the beginning to know that I deserve to be in the room, or to know that I will do a good job. I think what I deal with most actually is that even though I don't feel like an imposter, that I can be in rooms and people try to make me feel like I am. I think that that's so much of what women of color, Black women specifically, deal with, and what imposter syndrome a lot of times is. It's not that you don't think you should be in the room, it's that you're made to feel like you don't belong in that room. And that happens oftentimes when I am in rooms where, one, someone's not familiar with my work or what I've done in the past. And I think that can happen sometimes because people aren't putting the effort in, but also because they don't feel like they should, that you deserve the respect of being researched before you enter into that meeting or before you show up to that event or what have you. But I also think it's sometimes when they see you and you look a certain way. I mean, I have pink Senegalese twists in my hair right now, that sometimes that can come off a certain way, especially in the work that I do. So sometimes it's sitting in that room and holding my own and not backing down and not feeling as if I have to shrink myself. And the more I do that, the easier it becomes to know that, you know, not only am I not an imposter, but you don't have a right to believe that I am or that I don't belong here. Those moments don't happen that often, thankfully. And I feel so much more comfortable now not feeling that way. Sometimes it feels like it's a rite of passage to feel like an imposter, or at least social media makes it seem like you're supposed to feel that way sometime in your career, which I think, it's amazing when so many women can show up and be like, no, I deserve to be here more than you probably, actually.
No, seriously. And you raise a good point about, you know, being in situations or being in rooms where people make you feel, or they want to make you feel like you are an imposter. And that's so much of, you know, what I felt during my corporate standpoint from like bosses or just like higher ups and making me feel like, oh, like you're this age, so you should have this type of role, or you shouldn't progress until you are this far along, because I didn't progress until I was that far along. But just kind of like pushing their limiting beliefs on you and making you feel like you should be stuck in a certain place, or you should just uphold certain standards in order to progress. So I love the way that you put that, because that's definitely such a great perspective that I don't think we think about, right? We think about like what we're taking in and on social media and how people are making us feel, but we don't think about like those opposing actions.
And age is also a big factor that I didn't necessarily even touch on, but actually I'm going to give an asterisk to myself, because I think that age is probably, if I ever do feel imposter syndrome or feel insecure, that's where it comes in. And I still feel uncomfortable talking about my age. Mm-hmm. I technically became an associate director when I was 23 turning 24, which is an incredibly young age to be talking to, you know, investors and startups, people who have companies worth millions of dollars, and feeling as if I have a right to be recommending certain things or pushing back on certain things. But there's also people in your corner who will tell you that you're doing a great job, or who will be really verbal in showing you that you have what it takes to succeed. And that has been most helpful in terms of like kind of the age imposter syndrome, that I know I do a good job because I've had clients who told me. I've worked with people who are twice my age who tell me I am overqualified for someone, you know, with my level of experience, or who are impressed that I've gotten this far. So it makes it easier to combat the few and far between who look down on me because I'm the age of like their daughter and they don't think that, you know, I deserve to be telling them, you know, what to do, or even to be sitting at the same table as them.
Yeah, I think it just goes to show like how important it is to just own it, whatever role that you're in, because, you know, people are going to find ways to put you down anyway. Let that be something that they're battling with, and you just continue to progress and you do good work and you just continue to rise above that. So I think I was reading Elaine Welteroth's book, and she talked a lot about, well, she talked a portion about ageism and how like she felt uncomfortable disclosing her age, especially with the work that she was doing. And it made me rethink my corporate career too, and how that played a huge role in that. So I love that we are talking about that and being open about that too. So tell me more about some of the early foundings of MKD as a new entrepreneur. What are some things that you learned? What are some things that you want to, I guess, give advice to like new entrepreneurs on like avoiding? Because there's some things that I wish that I could have avoided, but it's all learning.
First is, don't be afraid to pitch yourself. I think there's some level of, I mean, self-promotion can be icky. It can be awkward. But I reframed it as like, you're doing the other person a favor. Like, if you believe that your service is actually helpful and can make the lives of other people better, then you telling them about it is doing them a favor, and you're actually helping them out. So not being afraid to pitch yourself and putting yourself out there is incredibly important and essential to getting clientele. It's an essential part that I think is underestimated. And also the lead time, you know, for generating clients, that sometimes you think you met someone and you're gonna be signing the contract in 2 weeks, but it's usually 2 months, if not longer, to get them through the door, to get them to be a confirmed yes with, you know, the check coming through. So that's the one thing that I think is important to know starting out. Another thing, and I kind of mentioned it before, is that savings is important before you start. I think that if you have hustle and grit, I think that you can make it work. I don't think there's any perfect number. I've heard a range from $500 to $50,000 saved up before. But having something that makes you whatever comfort level you have, and then also thinking about your future. Retirement is something that I think about, or even not just retirement, but, you know, myself 20 years from now, being a young entrepreneur is a lot different than, you know, starting something in, let's say, the second half of your career. So really spending some time or doing your future self a favor by looking into what a Roth IRA is or all those other things that you may not have had because we're so used to, you know, 401ks being the standard, or looking into some of the other opportunities or tax advantages that come with being an entrepreneur, you will be so thankful to yourself in the future. And the last, which is maybe a little bit more personal, that I've been thinking about a lot actually recently is being okay that your ambition shifts. I grew up in the girl boss era, which is not really where we are now. And it takes a lot of ambition to start a company or to become an entrepreneur. And the kind of level of go-getterness that takes may not be the same level of what you keep throughout the entire time. I think that it's almost like not a bell curve. I'm trying to think of the word for it. But there's a specific amount of energy and ambition that takes to start. But it's okay if a few years in you're like, you know what, I'm a little bit good with this right now. Like, I don't have to be, you know, the top or the best or the whatever of what I'm doing, which looks a lot different as an entrepreneur than maybe in the more corporate setting where in order to climb the corporate ladder, you always have to be number one or really be fighting to be the top.
I love those. And for that last point that you said, I really love that because, you know, as an entrepreneur or as anyone going through your career journey, you go through seasons, right? And I felt like early on in my entrepreneurship season, I was, you know, heavily into my morning routines. I was journaling, I was meditating, I was going to the gym, I was doing X, Y, and Z, and just really like hone in on my work. And then, you know, fast forward 2 years, I have some other like life changes that are going on. And I'm just like, okay, like, I think that I can like go at a little bit of a slower pace. I don't have to hit the gas super hard. And I can just sit down and like enjoy life and enjoy like the people around me and just feel good about where I am currently. And then, you know, hit the gas in some other areas. But definitely finances is something that for me within like the last 2 years, I'm like, okay, let me invest in LVest. Let me talk to my financial advisor. Let me get my books sorted out with my accountant. I feel like those are some of the things where you can kind of fall to the wayside as an entrepreneur because you're not in a traditional corporate role. And so you don't have anyone really guiding you or telling you like, oh, just transfer some of your paycheck to this retirement fund. You have to be proactive in doing that, which has been a huge learning for me.
Yeah, because it's also a chicken and the egg, because if you keep the way you're going, you won't really ever or usually won't be able to save enough to grow a team. Like, it takes like a lot of strategic thinking ahead of time or making sure you're doing the right thing. And there's only so many hours in the day. You can only make so much money, especially in client services, because it is your time that you're giving. So I think that actually probably is the most important thing. So I'm still learning is how do I set myself up for success financially, not just in getting bigger clients or, you know, working more hours, but savings, investing, and getting people in my corner who know the things that I definitely don't.
So what advice would you give to women out there who they have a side hustle right now and they're kind of nervous about taking the leap? Like, they are putting those things into place, they're saving into place, but they're just nervous.
The advice I would give, I mean, a lot of people already are giving good advice on this. I think it's a question that I hear often and hear such good things that I use for myself still. And the one thing I haven't heard as much that, is incredibly helpful is getting one or two people who are in your corner, who know you're going through this transition or who you know that you want to, who will hold you accountable, who will push you to not make excuses, but also will be really empathetic to like the hard times. If it weren't for a specific friend that I had in my corner who was saying like, because even when my boss told me that she thinks that I should leave and do my own thing, my first response to her was, no, I want to stay. And then when I went home and told my friend that, she's like, but you do want to leave. What do you mean? Like, actually, you know, this is your opportunity. So having those friends in your corner who really understand you and what you're trying to do, what you're going to do, can be really helpful. It doesn't have to be like everyone in your life. Sometimes that can be hard to, you know, have everyone understand you, but at least having one or two people who, first of all, you're transparent with, that you share your actual goals, and don't, you know, sometimes it's scary to say, you know, your goals out loud, but telling them and then really asking them, like, hold me accountable, be my support system, you know, this is going to be a tough transition, and having someone like you in my corner will make a huge difference. I think that will make the transition faster and easier, because it's hard to do it alone.
Yeah, I think having people that make sure that you are grounded and who center you and who remind you of your goals and your just like your path is really important. So having a tribe, really, you don't even need a tribe. Just one or two people.
An accountability partner.
Align with you. Oh, accountability is definitely a must. Really, most of the work that you do, it takes discipline, right? Like, you can have like all the skill set that you want, but if you don't have the discipline and if you're not proactive in, you know, progressing, then it's just not going to be what you want it to be. So I definitely agree with you on that. Well, any newness coming down the pipeline, anything that we should be on the lookout for? Tell us everything.
Speaking of accountability, I'm going to say it here so I hold myself accountable to actually do it, or at least try to do it, is that part of me getting to where I am was falling in love with shopping and products and like kind of being like the influencer. Like, I had a fashion blog back when influencers were called bloggers and things like that. And I really want to go back to that. So I am hoping to be launching a shopping and consumer platform that is kind of OG in a way, but still feels modern, where there's like articles and content and interviews, but it also was really focused on people who like love to discover new products and niche and indie brands, and kind of be the first of their friend group to have this brand or this product. So I'm excited to be launching that, which is a little bit different from what I've been doing for the past couple of years in client services work.
Well, that's really exciting. And tech is always a space that I aspire to be in. So I'm very excited for you to launch the platform. And where can we find you? Where can we follow you so that we can, when you do, we can stay up to date?
Instagram. So my Instagram is my first and last name. I'm like a pseudo influencer. I have like almost no followers, and I don't, you know, try to beat the algorithm. But it's where I post a lot of what I'm doing day to day. And LinkedIn is where I have a lot of my professional updates. Mm-hmm. And then my website, mkedi.com, mkedi.com, is where the website, or where the platform will be probably first introduced or kind of be an offshoot of that.
Nice. Armuna, thank you so much for chatting with us today. I'm so excited to just be able to share all of these gems that you dropped with our listeners. And if you all want to stay connected, I'll have all of Muna's information in the show notes. But it was just so great having you and just like listen to your insight, especially when it comes to entrepreneurship.
Thank you. I'm so glad to have been able to have such a wonderful chat with you. Thank you for being an absolute great host.
If you're not already, be sure to follow us over on Instagram at Currently Bossing and The Boss Up Inc. If you love our podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Your rating helps us to reach other bosses like you who are ready to level up and reach their truest potential. Tune in every Monday for our newest podcast episodes. We'll talk to you then. Bye.